Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here, and today we welcome the Vicars of Vegetables, Erwin Goldman, Professor of Horticulture, Associate Dean in the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at UW-Madison, one of our guests. Erwin, hi, nice to have you with us.
Larry, thanks so much for having us.
And with us by phone, all the way from Costa Rica, Professor James Nguyen, who's from the Department of Horticulture. Jim, are you there?
Indeed I am, Larry.
Hey, Jim, it's so good to hear your voice.
Oh, Erwin, it was so good to hear your voice.
How are things going down there?
Well, pretty good. We've got, of course, all of the students are just coming back from the beach now. So it's been a rough morning for them.
Sure.
Of course.
And this is a marine biology module in your course.
Yeah, this is the marine biology module that we have. But they were all out last night searching for the leatherback turtles.
Oh.
Coming in on the beach. So we camped on the beach, near the beach, and then we went out at night. Because you know why I do it, though? Well, for several reasons. But one of the important ones is that you can look, when you're on the beach, when you look up at the sky, it is just a blaze of Milky Way stars. It's just so magical.
Yeah, it surely is. And I've spent some time on Caribbean beaches watching the leatherbacks, and it's a great experience, that's for sure. Well, have you seen any chili peppers while you were there?
You know, there are not a lot of chili. This is one of the odd things about maybe this country, or maybe Central America in general, that really... Does our radio signal reach down here, by the way, Larry? Am I going to offend anyone?
No.
Not any more than usual.
Okay, no more than usual.
Yeah.
But really, the fine cuisine and the fine vegetables are really, for the most part, Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Here, it seems to me, this is only a personal opinion now, it seems to be more of a sort of a beef culture. Mm-hmm. You know, it's meat.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so the famous dish here is called, you know, the dish in this region of the country is called gallo pinto, which is black beans and rice. And I will say that our students have become... amazingly accustomed to this, because basically either that or you go hungry.
Well, so peppers, chilies. You're not going to. Well, what are the vegetables there in Costa Rica that are?
You know, it's very interesting that it's really interesting to think that. Well, let's start with the plantation crops for a moment. You know, you think about the big crops here in Costa Rica, and of course our students have seen all of these. You know, you think of coffee and pineapple, you know, and sugarcane. But of course those are all introduced.
Oh,
none of
sure.
None of those are native to this region. I mean, I think the only... Is papaya native to here, Erwin?
Yeah, I think that could be Central America.
I think papaya and avocado are the two fruits.
Yeah.
But almost all of the other fruits, you know, you think of Latin America, you think of, oh my gosh, I'm going to have a mango. But in fact, mangoes are introduced.
Yeah.
Tamarindo is introduced. All of those are introduced. So the vegetables here, it's surprising that vegetables have... You know, for the many years that I've worked or visited here, vegetables are really not an important part of the diet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's much more, it's only sort of recently that you will find a salad. But, Erwin, you will be pleased to find that one of the favorites here, ironically, is the beet.
Oh! Well, that's
talk
a sign
about
of,
it. You know, this culture's coming around.
It's a sign of high culture over there
it
in
is
Central
indeed.
America. How are they adapted to that environment? Do they do well there?
Well, you know, the other odd thing about, and I think one of the fascinating things with the students has been that here in Latin America, all you basically look for is altitude. In other words, you just keep going up or down the mountain until you find the temperature that's appropriate to grow the vegetables that you like.
Yeah.
So there are many onions and beets and carrots that are grown, and those are all grown at about between 800 and 1,000 meters.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Potatoes, another introduced crop to this area, is grown at a very, very high altitude. Tomatoes are grown at the very high altitudes as well, because at low altitudes they tend to become infected with virus due to
whites
flies.
And some, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you what, we have lots of people to visit with you.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, let's go to Mary Jo in Plain, Wisconsin. Mary Jo, hi to you. Thank you.
Good morning, Larry, and hello, Irwin and Jim. I've never spoken to Costa Rica before. I have such a serious tomato problem that it's preventing me from making homemade salsa, so I can't even get into that end of it, and I hope you can help me.
What's the problem?
All right. Every year, and for like 8 or 9 years, we've tried growing tomatoes here in Plain in our garden, and we get this little black spot. It's not blossom end rot. It's just like little black specks come just when the tomatoes are just about perfect to pick, and then you bring them inside, and if you keep them on the counter or don't eat them for like a day, those spots get bigger and sort of sunken. And, you know, I don't know. I tried this past year to take them out of our garden soil, and where we rotate them every year, and put them in big pots on the patio. And we were doing splendidly until we got that tons of rain. And then that caused these little specks to show up.
Hmm.
Well, any ideas?
Yeah. Irwin, what do you think?
Little spots to big spots.
Would you describe the sunken part of the fruit as like a does it look like a lesion?
Yeah, it does. If you let it sit for 3 or 4 days, then that'll happen, yeah.
Because it does sound bacterial. Jim, doesn't it sound like a bacterial disease?
Is it in the mid-season or late season? I mean, when it becomes rainy, it's not...
Our tomatoes, I don't know whether it's when we plant them or what, but usually they're ripening in August.
But, you know, here's the bottom line.
Yeah.
They've got the little spots, right?
Right.
You put it in the blender. Who's going to know?
I don't want to kill people. I'm worried about that, you know.
You put in some chili pepper. It's probably adding to the flavor, is all I can imagine.
Oh, yum. I knew I'd get great advice from the Vickers.
You knew you'd get solid advice from us on this issue.
Yes.
Boy, you know, I'd love it if you'd send us a picture of what these look like. But it sounds to me like a bacterial disease that... You know, you're seeing very small, a little bit of infection, and then when those bacteria are multiplying.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Can you send a picture? Do you have a...
I didn't take any. I'd have to problem again this year.
Well, if you have it again this year, send a picture. It does sound... It sounds a little like blossom end rot.
And if you let it wait long enough, it could look like that, but I've had blossom end rot in the past, and I know what that is, and this isn't it. And I didn't know, like, our house is surrounded, you know, by woods, and I didn't know if this was airborne and would come, and obviously what? Not soil-borne. Because
but, you know, I would try a different variety.
Oh, well, we've been trying various varieties.
Have you tried the famous Jim and Irwin? We don't have a creative name for this variety as of yet.
Miracle.
At this moment, it's called 1x10.
1x10, okay.
And that makes a heck of a good salsa, and I do have seed, and if you send a request, and of course, I have indicated before that request should be written on the back of a Rolex.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, no problem about that.
I have several of those sitting around.
Or you can send along some of your salsa.
Afterwards.
Okay. Yeah. I have a possibility here, Jim. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm just looking this up. There's a rot. It's actually a fungal rot called anthracnose ripe rot, and I want to get a sense from you if this could be it. This affects ripe or overripe fruit, and you have round spots that are sunken and about a half an inch in diameter.
Yeah.
Does that sound?
Well, I've never gotten them to the half inch because they just start out looking like you flicked little black specks all over the tomato.
Hmm. So this is a fungal pathogen. Can I ask you? Are there any symptoms on the leaves?
No.
None at all.
The leaves, no, they don't get any lesions or anything. They're looking good, and they're not yellowing.
Well, anthracnose ripe rot is a possibility. It affects mainly the fruit and mainly when they're ripe.
Okay.
So it's something. But if you would have an opportunity to send a picture in,
sure,
we could take a look.
Okay.
And just in terms, now, how far apart do you plant the tomato plants? I mean, do they get air circulation?
Oh, yeah. This year I was especially, because I put them in the big pots on our patio where they would get like 9 hours of sun every day.
Yeah.
And they're, the pots, I put soda bottles that I'd cut off down into the soil so they'd water and water you know, every day, even water. And they were probably, the pots were 2 feet apart, you know, themselves, and so the plants
weren't touching or anything.
No.
Okay.
And, you know, they had cages, so they weren't draping anywhere. Yeah, no, I was really just, I thought this year we had it licked, because we used potting soil, you know, that from packaged, not our garden soil.
Well, I tell you what, if you've got a digital camera, take a picture.
Will do.
And where would they send that?
Well, is it possible, Larry, that they send it in here and you forward it on? Is that
sure? Why don't you just send it to us?
Okay.
Go to WPR.org, Conversations with Larry Mealer, and my address, the address is right there.
Okay.
And then just email it to me, and I'll forward it. I typically do that anyway, so that's the best idea. I'll forward it on to Irwin and Jim.
Okay, because I really want to have a chance to get competitive here with salsa.
Understood. All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mary Jo.
Sure.
Bye-bye. Karen in Portage, your turn. Hi, Karen.
Hello. I'm calling with a question, if you know anything about growing hops in Wisconsin. I'm looking at three possible cultivars that look good, Williamette being the first choice, and then looking at Nugget and Cascade. One catalog says it's zone 4. Everybody else says it's zone 5. So I don't know who to believe.
On the
Cascade. This is one of the blessings of global warming.
Yeah.
Because we are moving into a new zone now. So probably, you know, those the Willamette, those all sound like Pacific Northwest cultivars.
But they do. You know, the Willamette, I'm pretty sure we've grown the Willamette in the Allen Garden. Jim, do you know that big trellis of hops? I think that's Willamette, and it did extremely well.
Does it
now,
yield
we are
in
considering
the first
hops
year?
As a vegetable, correct?
Yeah.
Does it yield in the first year?
Does it yield in the first year?
That I don't know. I don't remember back that far. But it was vigorous, and it was very productive by the time I got connected to that garden. So my sense is that you could have luck with something like that.
So give it a shot.
Okay.
That's what gardening's all about, experimenting. Thanks, Karen, for calling. Appreciate it. We're going to go to Kate in Barneveld next. By the way, you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mealer with my Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman from the University of Wisconsin College of Agricultural and Life Sciences on the Madison campus, our guest today, although Jim is in Costa Rica and with us by phone, he and several students. I heard some roosters crowing in the background. So, obviously in a very tony part of Costa Rica right now. Let's go to Kate in, let's go to Kate in Barneveld. Kate, hi.
Hi, it's an honor to talk to you guys. You are my growing gods.
All right.
Wow.
And I think only you can help us. We had a row of about 30 Brussels sprouts.
All right.
Which never became Brussels sprouts. The plants grew tall, and they were sturdy and green and vigorous all year long. And they formed little leaf tufts, but those tufts never stayed firm. The heads didn't form tight heads.
Right.
So we did not get a single Brussels sprout. Now, I'm going to give you that information, and hopefully you can tell me what's wrong with my soil or the conditions or whatever. And then I'm going to share a brief haiku, and then I'm going to get off the air because I have three little children who are screaming.
Okay.
So
well,
here's my haiku, and then I'll listen for my info.
All right.
Okay. You, row of Brussels, my children love and long for you. Oh, you break our hearts. And I will listen off the air. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks a lot. A haiku. Boy, that's great. Jim Nienhuis, you are the Brussels sprout expert extraordinaire.
Well, this is a fall crop, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm just wondering if maybe she may have planted them a little bit too early in the spring, because you would actually put your Brussels sprouts in the very late spring, early summer, and harvest them just after the first frost.
Oh.
Right, because that's when they're going to be sweet.
Yeah.
Right.
And not bitter.
Right. So I think probably my only guess is that she may have put them in a little bit too early in the season. You have to wait until the fall. That's a fall crop. I mean, really, what we want to do in Wisconsin is we want to have our Brussels sprouts right at Thanksgiving. Right? Isn't that the perfect time for the Brussels sprouts?
Oh, yeah. I love Brussels sprouts.
You just got to leave them out there, and they will do their thing in the fall, and we can produce a very successful Brussels sprout crop in Wisconsin. No doubt about that, but it's a fall crop.
I agree with you. This is sort of like a crop that shifted over a bit, right? Instead of going out in early spring, you want to go out in early summer.
Right.
And then go till November. And so that's probably the issue here.
I mean, that's the tradition, to have Brussels sprouts at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I hope that helps. Thank you very much for calling. And Jolene in Ashland has a comment about hops, I believe. Jolene, hi.
Hi. I'm very much enjoying the program.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say my mother has hops, and I'm not sure which cultivar it is, but she is in a zone 2, maybe a 3. And we can't get rid of it.
Yeah, it's probably real vigorous, yeah.
It's spread all over around us. We feel a little guilty that it's in the woods now. So.
Well, you know what? It's interesting that you mention that, because hops, some species of hops are considered invasive weeds.
Mm-hmm. I believe it.
So some of the cultivars will, too. But go ahead, excuse me.
That was all I had to say. I'm not sure where that lady was from, if it was northern or southern.
She was from Portage.
I think the process... The opportunity here is for you to begin processing them. And I think there are some opportunities with the homebrew industry for you to deal with this invasive weed and process it into ambrosia.
There you go. I just wanted to make sure she knew that it does indeed grow in cold areas.
Yeah, I think she was from Portage, so it's further south from Ashland, that's for sure.
Definitely no problem for her then.
Thanks, Jolene.
Uh-huh.
Appreciate it. Marv in Spring Green, it's your turn. Hi, Marv.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, just we've been visited out in the country by many deer. We had some bales of hay, actually 30 small bales, that the deer have eaten down to maybe the equivalent of 3 or 4. And the deer have deposited their wonderful deer dew, as it's called, all over the vegetable patch. Now, normally when I think of excrement, I think of high nitrogen content and bulk and so on. But I've never had this particular problem to contend with. Could you please tell me what's going to happen?
Well, and probably, and so it's just laying out there. Erwin, if I was in Marv's shoes and I wanted to use it as a compost or as a manure, I'd probably want to compost that first.
I would.
I would too.
Yeah. So would you be able to collect that and compost it?
Well, it would be difficult to.
I think you could just turn it into the soil. It'll compost naturally over the winter.
Yeah. Well, that's what I plan to do, actually.
Sure. And think of the added flavor bonus.
I'm not thinking of CWD or anything like that.
Yeah.
I understand, humans don't get it no matter what the content is.
And your tomatoes are certainly not going to get it.
No. You really need, if you've worked it into the soil so it's got a growing or it's got a season.
Yeah, that would be okay.
That'd probably be okay. But I wouldn't be putting fresh out there when I'm planting my vegetables, I guess.
Agreed.
Okay. So good luck, Marv, with the deer droppings. Mary Ann and Hurdle, your turn. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi. I have a question. I my great grandmother had peonies, and they were passed down to my grandmother, then my mother, and now I have them. And they're a beautiful big pink peony. Moved from Chicago to the north woods of Wisconsin, and my peonies came with me. Very, very sandy soil. We did use some local farmers' manure that had composted for at least a year. And my peonies are absolutely pathetic.
Oh, pathetic peonies.
Pathetic peonies. They
that are... That could be the beginning of a haiku, though.
Pardon?
That could be the beginning of a good haiku. Pathetic peony. Let me see. Pathetic peonies in... Let me work on that for a few moments.
All right. Well, we're out of the vegetables and into the flowers here a little bit. But Irwin, have you got any advice?
I don't know, Jim. Are you familiar with the fertility that's needed for peonies?
You know, they seem to grow so vigorously. Of course, and that's in Madison. They seem to do so well. I really don't know what to suggest, but it could very well be that, you know, she did indicate that she had a very sandy soil. So she may want to, although she incorporated some organic material, I would say incorporate as much organic material as possible. In fact, get in touch with the previous caller.
Yeah. Who's got the deer drop?
I can't help but think, right, that deer droppings would add to the peony luster.
Okay.
And that could be the second line of our haiku, and I can't think of the concluding stanza to that haiku, but it has to be... Purple pink peonies of deer dropping origin. No, that's not working.
That's not working, Irwin. Now,
one thing I know about the peonies is they will not. They have to have a well drained soil. Would you say it's well drained?
Oh, it's very well drained, and we also have our local populace of peeing deer as well. So
okay.
Maybe that's the next line of that.
That could be too.
Populace of peeing deer. Let me think about this.
You might want to call just for fun. Go to your county. Look up in the phone book. Your county University of Wisconsin Extension office,
yeah.
And you'll have either. An agricultural agent, or you may have a horticulture agent. Not sure which county are you in?
I'm in Burnett.
Burnett. I think you've got an ag agent there, but I don't think you have a hort agent. But the ag agent there will know some things, too. And there's probably a master gardener program in Burnett County. And if you get on, look in the front of your phone book or the part where it's the phone, part of your phone book that has government, look under University of Wisconsin Extension, and then look under, find your county agent, and call that number. And I bet you will get some advice from them, because it would be quite specific to, Burnett County's up there a ways.
Yes, that's what I said. We have our own deer population.
So. Yeah. So try that out, because the extension agents are always willing to help out, and they may have some local things that Irwin and Jim and I just aren't familiar with. So give that a shot, Mary Ann, and good luck to you. Thank you for calling. Carolyn in North Prairie, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi there. I'm just calling to see if the peanut butter cookies I sent to the guys were good enough for the poblano pepper seeds.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I definitely have those cookies. And
hey,
I meant to share them with you, Irwin.
Could I get one of those cookies, Jim?
Yeah, well, but you know, they came and then they disappeared.
Oh,
and
oh.
I don't remember actually the sequence of events there, but I think it was hunger. And then, of course, the graduate students felt that,
I totally understand.
Yeah. You put anything edible. You could put peony leaves out there,
yeah.
And they would eat them.
They would, yeah. Now, was there a watch or anything along with that?
No, there wasn't.
There was salsa, and we did have that. And we shared that with the graduate students, and they loved it. And we do. And when I have you down on my little list, I have my little list now of poblano pepper lovers. And you will be getting them.
Wonderful. I didn't know if you maybe needed some more cookies.
Well, now be sure to send those directly to Jim's office, if possible. You know, I'm a little afraid of them going to Larry's office, you know?
Well, I just have the one address.
Oh, good. That'll work fine.
Okay.
Just the normal procedure there. Just send them, and they were terrific, by the way, and we did enjoy those. And that was some fine salsa, by the way. What is your recipe?
I didn't have salsa.
Oh, no.
I just had peanut butter cookies.
Oh, okay.
Somebody else sent the salsa.
Right.
Okay. And what's your salsa recipe?
I don't make it.
Oh, you don't? Well, you should.
Well,
and I think salsa cookies are a possibility.
I like the vegetables unadulterated.
Ooh, well, there you go.
All right. Carolyn, well, by the way, Jim, when are you going to mail those seeds out?
Well, we're producing the seeds right now in Chile.
Oh.
And so we won't get them back until about late February, early March.
Okay.
But we've chosen our variety, which also, well, it began with also kind of a pathetic name. It's called, you know, Poblano Number 4. But we've been working on that, and we will take suggestions over the air for what our poblano pepper should be.
Jim, when will you be sending out the cookies?
Yeah.
Is that should I look for those? Okay.
I'll try to keep
More around the. But you know, you put anything near the coffee machine, Irwin,
yeah,
and you know
true.
What happens.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Carolyn,
yes,
you'll
yes.
be getting those seeds. But
okay.
I've got
right.
you down, Carolyn.
Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you very much. And those are terrific cookies, by the way. We really enjoyed them. That was very nice of you to do that. You know, I got a lot of pictures. People didn't send me a Rolex, but I did get several pictures of a Rolex.
Oh, nice.
Right? Which I thought was, you know, modestly adequate.
Jan in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Jan.
Hi. I've got two questions about tomatoes, and one of them is I've known folks to take something like a dish bottle, a slender plastic bottle, cut the bottom off, and bury it alongside the tomato plant. There's earth between the plant and this bottle. And they felt that keeping that with water, that it watered the roots better.
Drip irrigation.
Yeah.
That's what we call it.
Is that a good thing?
Why, sure.
Great. Okay.
All right.
The other thing is, what about Epsom salts in the ground around the tomato plant?
Well, it really helps with any calluses that you have on your feet if you work barefoot in your garden, I think. I know personally that I've had this corn there, and when I use those Epsom salts, that tingling spirit, it just adds to the whole gardening experience, I think.
Okay, did the corn grow?
So it works. Yeah, it takes away from the corn rather than enhancing the growth of the corn.
Okay.
Right. That's exactly right.
All right.
Well, let's see. Epsom salts, would it have calcium in it? What are Epsom salts? Calcium carbonate?
I think so.
Yeah. So, and calcium is, for blossom end rot, it's often a calcium deficiency.
Right. Exactly.
But it would take a while for that calcium, I think, to be released.
I don't know how available it is.
Yeah,
but potentially it is.
What if I put calcium tablets down the bottle that I was talking about?
You know,
and then put water over the top of it.
I think it all depends on how available that calcium is to the plant, and so what form it's in. You know,
okay.
so calcium tablets by themselves,
powdered,
You know, it really depends on the form, and I'd encourage you to look at the fertilizer recommendations and see what forms of calcium seem to be the most appropriate.
Yeah, you might want to check that.
It is unusual, though, to see Epsom salts being applied to a tomato. I mean, when they get, because tomatoes don't get headaches, and I don't know that people would apply aspirin. Right?
No, we
don't want to go there.
Thanks, Jan. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And let's see, we've got Jane in Eau Claire with a peony suggestion, so let's go to Jane. Jane, hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, Hi, gentlemen. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Good. I have some old peonies, like she was talking about, and I think maybe, you know, when she transplanted them this time, she might have gotten them too deep for them to not. And you were talking about fertilizer and stuff. That'll just give her more green growth, and the flowers won't be there.
That's exactly right. That's
Are the flowers edible? Do you know?
No, I don't. I don't know about peonies. The ants certainly like them. You know how they do that to open them up.
Yeah, you know, I think if the ants like them, they must have a lot of sugars. I mean,
yes.
I had a mental image of peony blossoms, you know, with a little, you know, with some egg, you know.
when they first start, they're that big bulb, you know, and then the ants get all over them and kind of actually help them open.
Yeah.
But they're definitely, you can't put them down too deep.
Yeah,
when you transplant them. And so if she put, and, you know, and I think if she's incorporated some of that compost, it might be, although with the sandy soil, I don't know, it'd probably leach out enough by this year, maybe.
Yeah.
She just needs to wait. But I'm just saying, you know, people come and get some from I live on a family farm, it's 100 years old, and I think the peonies have been out there that long, but they're, people come and, you know, get some from around the edges of mine all the time and transplant them. And I live, you know, north of Eau Claire, so it certainly is, they grow up here, but...
Watch that planting gap.
They just need to be right on top of the soil almost.
All right, gotcha. Thank you.
Okay.
So, Larry, the Epsom salts are magnesium sulfate.
Magnesium sulfate.
Which would still be a very useful mineral for a plant, but so...
Okay, so we know. Susan from Crocker says Wisconsin used to grow hops for the beer industry, and wonder if you guys can tell us a little of the history. And we still have the barley and malt lab at the UW-Madison.
We
still have a barley and malt lab.
Mm-hmm. We have a cereal crops research lab that's a USDA ARS group. That is within the Department of Agronomy, connected to the Department of Agronomy. So there probably be a wealth of expertise there.
Yeah.
And we do have some. So if you're interested in that story, we could certainly connect you.
Mm-hmm. The Barley and Malt Lab. And I remember the guys, somebody who, one of my secretaries from years back used to go out with a guy from the Barley and Malt Lab, and they used to make a little beer over there just to test. Just a sample and make sure that they were growing the right barley and malt. Jim in South Range, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi, Larry. I just thought I'd let you know that maybe you ought to stop by the chemistry department there and get a little information about Epsom salt.
Ooh.
Yeah, because that's magnesium sulfate.
Yep.
Yeah, magnesium sulfate.
Thank you very much, Jim. And Irwin had divined that himself. And so magnesium sulfate would be useful, but it's not the calcium that we typically hear about in relationship to tomatoes and blossom end rot. But magnesium sulfate. Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Let's see. Marie in Green Bay. Oh, we lost Marie. Randy in Green Bay. Let's go to Randy. Hi, Randy.
Hi. I have an answer to the Brussels sprouts.
Oh, okay.
Okay. A number of years ago, my brother-in-law said to break off the tops once the plants come up, and the sprouts will form. And I didn't believe him, so I broke half of them off, and those half developed the Brussels sprouts, and the others didn't.
Oh, so you topped them.
Right.
Well, Jim, do you top yours?
No, I don't. That's interesting. That's an interesting strategy. You know, because they're just lateral buds. I mean, they're just like tiny little cabbages, but they're growing on lateral buds. Right, rather than a terminal bud, but I do not top mine, and we've had pretty good success with Brussels sprouts. I mean, I love going to the farmer's market in late September, October, November, and finding those long stems just loaded with Brussels sprouts. Those are terrific.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But isn't it? But of course, you have to have that frost, right? Because you will get cold sweetening there, so you will get some. So they become sweeter after the first frost.
Randy, is your brother in the Green Bay area as well?
Yes. Well, I think if you're having trouble, that would be the answer.
Yeah, have to give it a shot. If you have some trouble, give it a try. Topping a few do a little experimenting, see what happens. Good.
That's
good
what gardening's all about.
You
having
bet.
Fun, experimenting.
Thanks, Randy. Appreciate it. You can join in too, by the way. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. I had a question earlier about sweet potatoes, and I was...
Oh, that's a native crop here.
I was hoping that person would... We lost that call. Maybe that person will call back and let us know what he or she had to say about sweet potatoes. But we've got Stella in Sturgeon Bay on next. Stella, hello to you.
Hi. I'm just calling in regards to the first caller, the woman with the problems with her peonies.
Yeah.
She mentioned that they have lots of deer, and she didn't mention that they look like they'd been eaten, but peonies are deer candy, so that might be her problem.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
And if that is her problem, people that we know who live in a deer-infested area who never could grow any of their outdoor plants, ornamental plants, got the, it's called a scarecrow. You hook it up to a water line, and it has an electric eye, and it sets off a sprinkler when the electric eye beam is broken.
Yep.
And it goes...
and sprays them with water.
It sprays them with water, and they seem to be frightened of the noise. And they said that the first year that they used those, they put one at either end of their house. None of their hostas or peonies or any of their plants were touched. And at the night that they took them out at when it came time to remove them because of frost, the next day after they removed the scarecrows, everything was gone.
Wow. Oh, man.
So it does sound like they're pretty edible, at least by the deer population.
Yeah.
I don't know why I have this mental image of those being, you know, made up with scrambled eggs. But, you know, the reason I bring that up is because there's a plant here, and I don't know the name in the United States, but here it's called yucca.
Yeah.
And it produces these lovely white flowers. And one of my favorite dishes here is you'll harvest those white flowers off the yucca plant and put that with scrambled eggs, and it's just outstanding.
Wow.
Now, I don't want to recommend the peony until we find out if there's anything toxic. but I suspect they aren't, and I bet I just have this mental image of beautiful that would be in a scrambled egg.
Well, maybe somebody's tried it. Let's
out if one of our astute listeners has tried peonies and scrambled eggs.
Thank you, Stella.
Okay, thanks.
Appreciate the call very much. Our Vicars of Vegetables with us today. Jim Nienhuis, a professor of horticulture, gardening haiku poet. Erwin Goldman, professor of horticulture, associate dean in the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at the UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our Vicars of Vegetables with us here on this edition of Garden Talk. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Erwin Goldman is sitting with me in the studio. Jim Nienhuis is with a group of students in Costa Rica and with us by phone. He, every semester in the fall semester, has a course that relates to Costa Rica. And then over our winter break, he takes that group of students to Costa Rica. And
Nicaragua.
And Nicaragua?
As well.
Oh, boy. I didn't know you went to Nicaragua as well.
No, I want them to have the cultural experience of doing a border crossing.
Okay. I spent a little time in Nicaragua, but not a lot. And that's been a few years ago. But Fred in Roberts has something for us. Fred, hi.
Hi. I used to live in Siren, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And the last I knew of, the extension service that was at the courthouse there was moved, I think, to Spooner, which is in Washburn County. So... that lady that called in, you were...
Oh, telling her to look. Oh, yeah. I'm hoping that the phone number, even though it's moved to Spooner, would still be in that phone directory, but you're right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was riding, coming home, and I heard it, and so I thought, I'll see if I can get through or not.
Thank you very much, Fred. Appreciate it very much. Well, we always get straightened out by our listeners and helped a lot, especially on Garden Talk. Lots of people know lots of things. Bill in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. I just want to clarify the Brussels sprouts. I've been growing them for 35 years, and I can tell you, don't do half your crop by topping and half by not. And by topping, at the top of the Brussels sprout plant in August, you'll have like a little cabbage head. You know what I mean? It's a bud, and you pluck that bud out. You don't top off the whole top of the plant.
Okay.
You just pluck out that bud, and away you go. You'll have a great crop.
All right. So take the bud off the top of the plant in August.
When you see that your plant has reached its mature height, and you can tell.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably about 2 feet, 2.5 feet tall.
Yeah.
And you just pluck out that bud. Around it, there'll be a lot of leaves that you still need to collect sunlight for growth. So just that bud, pluck it out of the top.
What variety do you grow, Jade Cross?
Historically, I used to grow all the kinds from Thompson and Morgan, the British, you know, and they have 5, 6, 7 varieties. But right now, I'm growing Jade Cross, period. It's a very good variety.
Yeah, I grow Jade Cross as well. You know, it's a variety. I think it was developed actually for Northern California. But it does reasonably well here. I have not topped, but I'm gonna pick out that top bud now and check that out. But I've had a pretty good crop even without that.
Well, and that surprises me because you have to wait a lot longer.
Yeah.
And the thing is, in Wisconsin, when you talk about the first frost, but actually you can get some pretty severe hard frost that'll just, you know, destroy the, even though they're very cold hardy, it'll destroy them.
Sure, in Wausau in particular.
So what you want to do is you want to... You know, like I do harvest, like almost into mid-December, but the fact is you want to kind of watch it, and if you're going to have really bitter 10 above weather, you might want to put them in the freezer.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Bill.
Okay.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Okay, another, and Jim, I'm counting on you to try this out this year.
Indeed I will.
Carrie in Two Rivers, your turn. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. Epsom salts, it's a good idea to put a tablespoon around your rose bush in early spring. And so the magnesium works there. But I've never heard it used on any other plant.
Mm-hmm. You know, it makes more sense for roses, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, it
does. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
Roses edible? Why am I... I think I'm late for lunch.
I think they are edible.
Oh yeah, rose hips.
Yep.
Carrie, thank you again. Renee in Cumberland, I believe, is next. So let's go there. Hi, Renee.
Hi. I was calling about the Brussels sprouts too.
Yeah.
I don't remove my tops, but I remove my leaves. And I remove the leaves as soon as the buds are starting to form. And I believe that's supposed to force maturity.
I would imagine it would. Although
I would say forcing maturity there is an understatement.
Yeah.
Well, we had this year I planted cumulus, which is a 148 day variety, in Vancouver, which is 105, and both did extremely well. It far outperformed the Jade Cross that I used to grow.
Yeah, and you're in Cumberland, so you're north.
And these plants were 3 feet tall. I was really impressed with them.
Jim, do you think that by removing the leaves, you reduce the potential for some of the sugars to move into the buds?
Yeah, I've never done that. You know, I'm learning. I'm getting a lot of ideas on this radio show today, and am I just a lazy gardener? Is that what it boils down to?
No. But this is a clever.
I used to subscribe to Organic Gardening years ago, and this was a tip from them, you know, many years ago, and I've always done it.
Well, that's great. So you take all the leaves off?
As the sprouts begin to form, I remove the leaves, and sometimes I'll do it like once a week.
Huh?
Well, I suspect that you know, that stem is so thick that it is actually has a carbohydrate reserve.
Yeah, it's a reservoir for sure. So maybe that offsets any removal of the leaves.
We actually have picked into Thanksgiving, and I've had the plants freeze solid, and still, you know, if we got a warm spell of weather after that, they thaw it out. And
well, that's the way I do it. Yeah, I let them freeze.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm glad to hear so many people like Brussels sprouts because I love them. My wife doesn't.
But it might be the variety also.
Yeah.
Because I've sent a Stoke seed for this seed, and I was really impressed with these varieties. We are limited as to what we can buy around here, and mostly it's jade cross.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, these varieties I was pleased with, and I'm going to plant them again.
Thank you very much for calling, Renee.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. And I'm glad there's a woman by the name of Renee who likes Brussels sprouts, because my Renee does not. I don't know. Mark in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello. I don't have a gardening question, but I just wanted to send greetings to my daughter who's down there with you in Costa Rica.
Oh!
And your daughter, Leah.
Oh, Leah! Oh, she's very much in love with another young gentleman on this trip.
Yes, Nick also.
Nick.
Greetings to both, and I just want to check up with you, make sure they're being good. And
They've of course, been very good here. Very
nice. Healthy, and you're going to bring them back safe and sound.
I believe I will bring them all back safe and sound. They will have some bug bites here and there, and so I think some Epsom salts might be appropriate.
It sounds like that'll do the trick. Well, I won't keep you any longer.
No, they were going to walk over here today, and I don't know if they've made it back from the beach as of yet.
Well, I can kind of guess they're enjoying the beach this morning, so pass along my greetings and love.
Oh, how kind of you to call. Thank you.
Look forward to seeing all of you back here.
Oh, yes,
soon.
They're all safe and sound. You know, it's only the bug bites that are causing problems.
Oh, thanks, Mark. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Well, that's nice to have Dad call and see how it
goes. No kidding. I'll tell Leah that that is her father called.
Yeah. Well, she was basking in the sun on the beach. Zach in Madison, how are you?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
I received an aloe plant last year for Christmas.
Yeah.
And repotted it. With potting soil and then some smaller rocks in the bottom, which I think is standard procedure for that. And now it's really taken off. I keep it in my kitchen window. But some of the larger leaves are starting to droop. So I'm not sure if that's a product of the size of the leaves or maybe if I've overwatered it. I only water it when it appears dry. So I'm not sure if you guys have any input on that.
I've seen aloe, but you know, we were at the campground. We camped near the beach last night, all of the students and I, and there were aloe plants there. And even here, you know, in the tropical paradise, I noticed that there were some wilted, you know, the older leaves had wilted.
Okay.
But of course, you know, right now we find ourselves on the dry land side of the country. And it could very well be that I think that they tend to wilt here when they have that water deficit.
Okay.
So it could very well be that it's simply a water deficit for you.
Yeah.
Maybe try a little more water, or should I just clip them off if they're starting to droop because they're deficient?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know what to suggest there. But, you know, anything that's unattractive, I think, can be clipped off. Let's face it.
What you could do, too, is you could set it in another container and put some pebbles underneath the pot and then put some water in that so it's got a little microclimate around it that's moist enough. And,
oh, okay.
And then the water isn't directly just laying in the roots, but it's right under there for a little microclimate. Now, that might help, too, a little bit.
Okay. I'll give it a try.
And if you get a paper cut, I strongly recommend knocking off a little piece and rubbing it on your paper cut, and your pain goes away.
Oh, great.
I tell you, I keep one around just for that purpose.
Yeah, well, I do quite a bit of running, and it helps with blisters. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Zach.
Oh, I've got to tell Irwin something, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, I was reading, Gabriel García Márquez.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
He's got this book, El Amor en los Tiempos de Cólera.
Oh, sure, sure.
And listen to this, Irwin. It's a love story, this tremendous love story, right? And it's based in, you know, the Caribbean coast of Colombia. And it's all about this couple, you know, that's very much in love, and they get separated. But he does all of his communication with her via letters, right? The
mm-hmm.
two lovers.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of his letters, he writes to her and asks her to marry him, right? So it's very romantic. And she writes back and says, yes, I will marry you. However, only if you will assure me that you will that you will never serve me eggplant as a dish. You know, I had always been an admirer of Gabriel Garcia Marquez, but that just cemented my admiration for this man.
Yeah, well, that that's a prenuptial agreement that I can agree with.
You know, a prenup that includes the elimination of eggplant from the diet. I think
it's perfect.
It's perfect.
Yeah,
it doesn't get any better than that.
Now, did he? What was his answer?
Well, unfortunately, just after that, they were separated for 52 years, 9 months, and 3 days until they were able to find each other again. It's the most from I've been in tears personally for several weeks now.
Well,
I've been working through this book.
She's obviously got the right idea, though.
But I thought, what an insightful young lady.
Yeah, I'll say.
Clearly, this man made a good choice.
Excellent, yeah.
You know, I still like eggplant parmesan.
But, Larry, you've got to remember that eggplant parmesan can be made identical dish by going to Menards, buying those 2-for-29 sponges, slicing them delicately down the center. The eggplant adds nothing to that dish, Larry. It's all about parmesan.
You might be right. You might be right, Jim. Jim Neonos and Irwin Goldman are Vicars of Vegetables with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio and Garden Talk. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Neonhus and Irwin Goldman of the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at the UW-Madison, here to answer your gardening questions or to listen to your gardening haikus. Irwin is with me in the studio, Jim Neonhus, with a group of students in Costa Rica right now, and he's on the phone right now with us, and so we're pleased to have both Jim and Irwin here, and pleased to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234, in Madison at 263-1890. Johnson in Shorewood is next, I believe. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Unfortunately, I don't have a clever haiku, but I do have the aforementioned squirrel problem in a very urban setting. And I was wondering if you guys had any suggestions.
Hot peppers.
Hot peppers or garlic? Yes. Hot peppers or garlic oil?
Garlic oil?
Yeah. I think.
And Epsom salt.
What is the problem exactly? Tell us about the problem.
Well, actually, it's a new problem to me. I just moved here from Florida, and when we moved in, I decided to plant some, actually, bell peppers and poblanos.
A poblano guy.
Oh, love them.
Yeah.
I love poblanos. But I planted them, and I seem to have the squirrels just herding in, and they came from backyard, front yard, power lines, you name it, and they nipped away all the buds. They ate holes in the in the stems, kind of thing, like on the leaves and everything. And I didn't know if there were any solutions outside of building a cage that closely resembled something out of a Mad Max movie to keep them away.
No, yeah. Well, and you know, we're not allowed to use the .22 rifle, right, in Shorewood, which is a good solution as well. Now, one of the ways that I've dealt with tree rats is by using the hot pepper seeds in the bird feeder. Have you ever seen that happen?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that
I've done it.
Oh, that is so much fun.
Hot sauce.
Because, you know, they dive in, they get in, the squirrels can get into any bird feeder ever, right? So what I do is I put in some of the hot pepper seeds. Of course, the seeds themselves do not have capsaicin, but the seed coat does, right?
Yep.
And the squirrels will be munching away, and all of a sudden, the little tree rats will hit some of those hot pepper seeds, and then their little tail, those ridiculous tail things that they have will just alight, right? And they will dive off those bird feeders and never come back. So that is my solution to the squirrel problem in Shorewood.
Yeah, and unfortunately, for plants, it doesn't work quite as well.
Oh.
So, what you know, squirrel, I'm unfortunately, I can tell you, sir, that squirrels, even if you could use a .22, I've had Scott Craven on the show has claimed that a friend of his trapped out of his backyard 140 squirrels. And as soon as he trapped one out, a new one would come and take its place. And that's how he was able to keep going with the squirrels. And he never solved the problem. So I don't know if anybody else has some ideas about it. And this is squirrels in a highly urban area. How do you get them away from your plants? You know, you can't spray. I don't imagine. I suppose you could, but every time you spray and then it rains and then you've got to apply again. I don't know. Irwin, if
I see reference to squirrel repellents of all kinds. You can find all sorts of products out there. And I would guess that very few of them, if any of them, are effective.
They're effective in the short run, but
long term, I don't think you'll find. Now, I often wonder about things like garlic oil, and that's why I mentioned that. I mean, those, you know, a squirrel will be repelled by many of the same things we would be repelled by. Really,
yeah.
Honestly,
yeah.
You know, so a heavy dose of garlic oil, which you can buy and is a good pesticide, might be something to consider. But in the end, I would guess that very few products actually will repel them. But it would be interesting to hear what the listeners think.
Yeah, it would.
Or an alternative location, actually. Does he grow in the community gardens at Sherwood?
Do you grow?
No, actually, we're in our backyard, but we do have a community garden close by that we were thinking about going to.
You know, I don't remember if there's been much of a problem actually in that community garden area. You know, it could be that, you know, where you've got all of those trees, there's, you know, there must be 10 squirrels in every one of those maple trees in Sherwood. But I've grown in the community garden, although now, of course, I have my special side, the railroad garden.
Yeah, very few people know about that. As you
go to the pool, you will see the poblanos growing out there. And the railroad garden has not been bothered by the squirrel that much. Well, of course, my youngest son goes out there with a slingshot, which has been also pretty effective. But I would say, you know, you're probably going to have to find a new location. Have you grown in that community garden over there, Irwin?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I didn't have a squirrel problem there. So maybe it's worth the $25.
Yeah, you might want to try that, the community garden as opposed to the backyard and just
see
what happens.
I've got to find out why he's a poblano lover and if he is a Chile Relleno fan.
Are you a Chile Relleno fan?
Oh man, you just struck a chord. Chile Relleno. I'm originally from Texas, so that's where my peppers come from.
Oh, God bless you. You know, Irwin and I are very much into this, and of course one of the things we do in our class is that we grow our poblano peppers. And, of course, we do have a new poblano hybrid coming out this year, right? The Wisconsin. And the name, no one likes the name. I'm calling it the Wisconsin Wosta. With a W in front of the Rosta, the Wisconsin Wosta. But no one seems to like that. So we are looking for suggestions from our audience today as to how we might be able to name this poblano pepper. But it's a fairly early poblano, and boy, I'm getting some rave reviews from those who have tried it in terms of its adaptation to Wisconsin, and it makes a heck of a good chili relleno, I'll say that.
And where can we get those?
That is the seed that's being produced right now in Chile, and we'll get it back in late February or March. It's an F1 hybrid that we're producing. And so we have to produce the seed there in the winter season. So we will have it in the late spring. We have it back in time for planting season, that's for sure.
All right.
So when you do have them back for planting season, how do we get a hold of them then?
Well, you write on the back of a Rolex. Did we explain this earlier?
You write
your request.
The Rolex story.
You send your request to the university on the back of a Rolex. And then you're pretty much, or you can try the alternative, which is the peanut butter cookie.
The peanut butter
cookie. Also appears to work very well in my lab.
And how do people contact you, Jim?
Well, they write to me at my normal address there at the university at, what are we, Department of Horticulture, 1575 Linden Drive, 506. And I put you on my list, and then when I get some, as soon as that Rolex comes in, I put you down on my list, and you get some seeds.
All right.
So what's the address again?
1575 Linden Drive.
Oh, Linden, L-I-N-D-E-N.
Right, like the tree.
Yep.
And the zip is 53706. And send me a little note. Oh, you can send me an email as well to Ninhus, that's N-I-E-N-H-U-I-S, at whisk.edu. And that's another effective way. And then send me your address there. And then when I get my seeds, we'll send you some.
Sounds good.
All right.
Oh, I'm so pleased to hear a poblano pepper lover. That is one of my, and you came from Texas. You know, we have our chili roaster. Mm-hmm. So we have a roaster that we that two brothers made for us in Arizona. So we do a chili roast, and we have a good time with our poblano peppers. No doubt about that.
Thanks.
Those are wonderful peppers. Yeah, I love them.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Lola in Richland Center, your turn. Hi, Lola.
Good morning or the afternoon, and thank you for this wonderful program. I listen to it all the time. But on this insect bite, there is an herbal remedy for that, and it is called cat's claw. And you can buy, it comes in capsules, and you can buy them either at a health food store or just like there are seed catalogs, there are herb catalogs. And it the price ranges all the way from $50 for the 100 capsules at a health food store to $8 at a seed catalog, and they're
now
all the same.
Now, this product is not for scratching, right?
Even no, this name, product is to take ahead of time.
The name seems to imply like that it would be used just as a scratching, like some sort of an abrasive pill.
No.
No,
well, this is for you to take as soon as the summer season, the spring season starts when the insects arrive, and you take it so that they don't bother you.
Well, I had enough. See, my students here, of course, are getting attacked by insects that they're not used to. So my solution was that I took them to, there's a spa on one of the volcanoes here.
Oh.
And so I took them to a spa just, you know, I know it's not the academic portion of the class. We all recognize that, but I felt that in order to soothe their insect bites, we took them to a spa over on one of the volcanoes, Miravalles, and they have been, you know, they just lounged in this volcanic hot spring water, and apparently it was able to soothe their insect bites. They were all smiling, I'll tell you that.
Did you have some Epsom salts?
In fact,
there?
They're all walking. They were walking past my front door as we spoke. They're all the students are on their way to lunch. And I believe all of their insect bites have been cured by either the spa or the ocean dip this morning.
Well, cat's claw is it's a tropical vine. It grows in the rainforest and jungles of South America and Asia. And some people even think it helps with arthritis and premature aging.
Hmm.
So
bring some of that back, Jim.
Bring a little cat's claw.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Lola, by the way. Appreciate it.
You can also rub plantain leaves, you know, crush them up so there's the moisture.
Plantains?
Yep. Plantain, right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, my mother used to do that. She used to put we used to have to go out when we were kids on the farm, and we used to have to harvest plantain leaves, and she used to put it on her arthritic knees all the time, and it used to be wonderful for her. I wonder if the banana leaf here would be available.
Try them.
Yeah, it's worth a try. Thanks, Lola. Appreciate the call. Kathy in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Jim, I just wanted to say hi to my son and daughter-in-law, Ben and Jenny Erdman.
Oh, Ben and Jenny.
How nice.
And I also wanted to give you a great big thanks for all the wonderful things that you've done for Ben, especially for Ben, and for all the students. So thanks.
Well, you're very welcome. You know, it's such a honor for me to be able to, because, you know, I lived here. I was in the Peace Corps in this country many years ago. Well, my God, 33 years ago, when I was just a babe. I was about 6 months old at the time. And, you know, basically what I do is I take them to all of the adventures that I learned about when I was in the Peace Corps. Is what I tried to do is share all of those adventures with the students. And it's been a real pleasure to have Ben and Jenny here because,
you know, they're such a good example for the rest of the students. You know, and they seem to be enjoying themselves. I don't see a lot of unhappy faces out there.
Yeah, I bet they are enjoying themselves. Anyway, I'll let you go.
Thanks, Kathy. Thank you very much for
calling. Thank you for that encouragement.
Thanks for calling. And Mike in Seneca has something about squirrels to talk about.
Thanks,
Mike.
I just thought I would cast some light on your dilemma on the callers that had
squirrel problems.
Squirrel problems. Now, as you know, you have squirrels like nuts, and you have when there's no nuts, they attack the bird feeders. So what you have to do, the solution is give them what they want. And I'm surrounded by forest on three sides here, and I've got hundreds of squirrels, and on a poor nut year, they would just, you know, they would jump onto the bird feeder from a limb, and they wouldn't even go up the post, and then they would sit there munching on the corn and the oil seeds in there. So what I did, I made some other little squirrel feeders, and I put them away from the buildings, and I put peanuts and hickory, if I had hickory, but walnuts. Another thing you can do is take short ears of corn and fasten them to a coat hanger and hang them in the limbs of your trees. Cut the center of the coat hanger on the bottom with a diagonals, straighten it out, poke it into the ear from behind, which is soft.
Right.
And then kind of orient the thing in the trees, and then the squirrels will eat the ear corn as well. So I have never had a squirrel in the feeder once.
You offered them the Waldorf Astoria.
Yeah, that's
really
right.
You know, and I have chosen another route. I've gone to violence, really, and what you've really offered them is a cornucopia, right? And I cannot bring myself to do that.
I don't see you out there making them tea, Jim.
That's no, I'm not gonna go there.
That's not your style.
I'm not gonna make them tea. Oh, come, tree rats!
But
not gonna happen.
But this is a very effective strategy. I mean, recognizing that they are going to be your neighbors, you know, and providing them with what they want. I like that idea.
That's a humanitarian approach. But I've not come to that, Irwin. I'm still into violence.
Right. Mike, thanks. Thanks a lot for calling. So give them what they want and move it away from the bird feeders in the other areas. And
he said he was inserting, you know, the wire behind the ear, I thought he was talking about the squirrels themselves. And I thought, yes, now that's an approach I could take.
That resonates. Yeah.
Cheryl in Superior, your turn. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. I was wondering about those hot pepper seeds and the birds. I realize that'll help get rid of the squirrels, but what about the birds?
Birds don't mind it.
They're not susceptible. They cannot detect the capsaicin. They don't have the receptor. So this is the beauty of peppers, that they can be disseminated by birds because the birds are not affected by the heat.
Not even in their stomach?
Nope.
Not at all.
Not at all.
They don't have the receptor. Or at least they have the receptor, but it's deactivated, so they can't detect the heat. Therefore, they can eat those fruits, and they can disseminate the seeds without any trouble.
And they disseminate those seeds, for the most part, on the windshield of my car.
Yeah.
I've noticed that quite a lot.
Well, and where do you find seeds like that, then?
Well, you just get any hot pepper seed, you know, if you mean seeds that you have that, you know, have not been, because the seed, the interior of the seeds does not contain capsaicin. The capsaicin is produced in the placenta of the fruit, and of course that's where the seeds are developing. And so the seed coat itself will have the capsaicin content. So we will alight, you know, the squirrels, but Irwin is exactly right.
And so
it doesn't affect the birds at all.
So if you when you have some hot peppers, save the seeds, put them in with the bird seed.
Right.
I'm thinking of the grocery store.
Their little tails start to twinge. It's so delightful for me.
You know, I detect some anger, Jim.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's coming through.
Now, yeah. Brenna has just walked. Another one of my students is on their way to lunch. They're all going to lunch right now. I'm watching them going over. And you know what they're having today are tamales.
Oh, tamales.
Yeah, and it's the classic tamale. It's the, you know, it's wrapped in the banana leaves. Oh, oh, they're so good.
Sounds great to me.
They're eating reasonably well, so we can let, you know, Ben and Jenny, you know, and Nick and Leah know that they are not all the everyone's going to come back. Basically, all of our activities center around eating. there are some activities that we have here with the students. It's basically to take up time between another meal.
How's Linda doing down there, Jim?
Fine.
Good.
Fine. No problem. Everyone's having a good time.
Fantastic.
I think, yeah.
Fantastic.
It was a little bit of a long night last night. Because, you know, when you go camping at the beach, it's hard to sleep. And
oh, boy. Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
What a tough assignment.
It was a tough assignment, Irwin.
Yeah.
But, and I still have a job, don't I?
Listen, some squirrels have moved into your lab. I hope that's okay.
I just don't have patience for the animals. I'm sorry. I know I may offend someone, and I apologize for that. But I cannot deal with them. I mean, the fact that I call them tree rats,
yeah,
you know, is indicative of my love of this particular species.
Lucille in Luxembourg, it's your turn. Hi, Lucille.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
About the squirrels, I had problems in my garden.
Yeah.
And I got a fake snake.
Oh, I love it!
And they don't go in there anymore.
Now, do you move the snake around?
No, I just put it in there and let it lay.
Is it a big snake, fake snake?
It's fake. It's probably, well, I don't know, a foot and a half, 2 feet long.
And they stay away.
Yeah. All right. I love this.
It keeps the birds away, too.
Oh.
Oh, my God. I should tell you that last night, there we were, I was with the students, we're camping at this very isolated beach, and, you know, I flashed my flashlight up on the roof, and there's a boa constrictor.
Oh.
But, you know, they're not, you know, those are not poisonous, right?
No.
So it's not bad. So they all got a chance to take pictures of the boa constrictor. So let all the, you know, Ben and Jenny's parents and Nick and Leah's parents know that they're going to have lovely pictures of the boa constrictor. But to my knowledge, it didn't consume any of the students.
Did you count them up this morning?
Oh, boy. Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Boy, that's a lot of detail.
There's a lot to managing these trips.
That's a management technique that I've not acquired, is actually counting. Well, we kind of...
Roughly, how many students should you have?
Maybe a few less. I'm not certain. But I, the ones that are here are smiling. But I don't know. It was a small boa. It wasn't a big boa.
Well, now, how many students do you have there?
We have actually 23.
23. Oh, what a great experience.
Fantastic. Boy, you are amazing, Jim, that you can do that. That is fabulous.
Well, and it's been fabulous to be able to talk to you. Jim, thank you so much. When will you return?
We'll be, they are leaving Sunday, but I'm going to spend a few more days here just to, you know, sort of rest and relax after the experience with the students. It is a little stressful for me, you know. Modestly stressful for me, but I try to deal with it as best I can.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks, Jim. Good to talk
Irwin,
to you.
It was so wonderful to hear your voice.
You too, and we'll see.
You know, the students, many of them, you're the advisor of many of these students, and they love you, Irwin.
Well, my feeling's mutual, and I look forward to seeing you in a week or so and getting back into the classroom.
Take care, Jim. Thanks a lot for calling in. Irwin, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Larry.
Oh, it's always a lot of fun. Irwin Goldman, Professor of Horticulture, Associate Dean in the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. Jim Nienhuis in Costa Rica right now, Professor of Horticulture and Gardening, haiku poet. And, of course, we'll have our Vicars of Vegetables back again, and there'll be another edition of Garden Talk next Friday here on the IdeasNet. Monday, our physical therapist, Bill Boisenall, and Lori Tyne Brody will be along to talk with us about physical therapy issues. In the meantime, thanks a lot for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store here on the IdeasNetwork of Wisconsin Public Radio.